Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Quarter here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the CNG Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. at Chris Canty 99. And Gojo, we started today with 9 vacancies in the National Football League, and we're ending today with 7. That list could get shrunk with what happens at Jacksonville with Byron Leftwich. But we got to shout out the Denver Broncos for them hiring their next head coach, offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett. And then, of course, the Chicago Bears making the move to hire defensive coordinator Matt Eberflus to be their next head coach. A day after they hire Ryan Poles to be their general manager, the personnel executive from the Kansas City Chiefs, it seems like the Chicago Bears have nabbed their guy. But the question becomes, what happens with Justin Fields? Because with the orientation of the head coach being on the defensive side of the ball, a priority has to be what you do at the offensive coordinator spot. But, Gojo, that sparked the debate on whether or not it's in the best interest of teams with young quarterbacks that are trying to be developed, whether or not they should hire the head coach that's on the offensive side of the ball versus hiring a defensive side of the defensive-minded coach. What say you, and what side of the debate do you fall on?
Yeah, Chris, I fall on the side of the debate of go and get the best candidate to lead the team, right? Because you know this, and we've talked about this, like the skill sets don't always translate. Being a great play caller doesn't really mean a damn bit of nothing if you can't stand in front of the room and do the other things that are required of a head coach in this league and college, however it breaks down. So, because Chris, I saw people making the point that if you pick a defensive head coach and you find a really good offensive coordinator and things go well, someone's going to come and probably try and take that guy, make him the head coach, promote him. And then all of a sudden, you're revolving offensive coordinators around the quarterback that you just tried to really help out in this situation. Chris, to me, the point that was made that I thought was well served on this front was, if someone's coming and poaching your people, that means things are going well and that your quarterback has gone out there and played well. So I think in all of this, if you try and do too much predicting the future, you lose sight of what's important in the present. And that's trying to find someone that you think has the leadership traits that you need at this spot, that is connected with players. Right now, we see that priority reflected in how many young coaches are being hired as head coaches. All those things, to me, matter a lot more than whatever side of the ball you call home coming into this.
Yeah, I'm 1,000% in agreement with you. I played for Bill Parcells, and he's one of the masterminds, one of the greatest football minds the NFL has ever seen, and I know his football philosophy and how he did things and his ability to be able to communicate with players. I think that's why he was able to get the most out of his guys, because he understood what motivated them. But not only did he have that rapport with the players, he had that with everybody within his organization, and everybody understood their respective roles. Now, things were short down in Dallas because Jerry Jones tried to encroach on some of the responsibilities that Bill Parcells had taken up, but the point remains the same. I think it has to come down to finding somebody that can be a leader of men, not just the guys in the locker room, but everybody within the organization, being able to set the agenda for the franchise and then follow through with the execution. So finding the candidate that works well in terms of your overall philosophy and where you want to take the team has to be the most important thing. I get it. It's a quarterback-driven league, and so there has to be an emphasis on making sure that whatever individual you hire to be your head coach can have a good working relationship with your quarterback. But that individual that's your head coach also has to have a good working relationship with the front office. He also has to have a good working relationship with ownership. And I think those are qualities, those are traits that go overlooked when candidates go through this hiring process.
Yeah, Chris, that becomes the difficult part to try and predict then. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio is how those traits are translated. And that's why you and I always talk about the foundation around these coaches. It's a lot like when you bring a star quarterback into an organization. It can be way more about what's in place around you, what the GM situation's like. Do you have an owner, like you mentioned, that's going to have their hand in the jar way too many times throughout this process here? All of that stuff's going to matter a ton, but like you said, you know, Mike Tomlin, the first place I ever went to training camp, the best thing I came out of there saying was, man, 1 through 90 on the offseason roster, 1 through 53, that guy's in there with everybody. That guy's got time for everybody. That guy understands the value of connecting everybody on that. And I think when we look a lot of these head coaching candidates, Chris, people get caught up in the hype machine around Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, what we've seen those offensive-minded coaches do. the number one thing people lauded about Sean McVay was the fact that he walked into the room and had almost a Tony Robbins-style leadership effect on them. People talked about when Andrew Whitworth came over, their offensive tackle from Cincinnati, that he spent so much time, Sean McVay, connecting with him in the offseason, worrying about what happened off the field, the person Andrew Whitworth was, and connecting there because he knew he was going to be a valuable leader on that team. Like, all that stuff, harder to be able to find in all of this, but to me, markedly more important than, you know, who you're connected to or what tree you come from necessarily.
No, I'm with you 1,000%. And then being able to also motivate guys and get guys to buy into whatever role is in the best interest of the team. That's also a big thing. Now, Tom Coughlin, whose orientation was on the offensive side of the ball, that was the thing that he was best at, being able to get men to sacrifice for something that was bigger than themselves. And Coach Coughlin would be able to explain to you how you fit into, you know, your specific piece of the puzzle, what you would be responsible for in order for our team to have the kind of success that we were all looking for, but then also how it was beneficial for the individual. So it really is one of those things that you have to look at holistically in terms of finding somebody that can communicate, especially with today's athlete, because we know today's athlete wants to be involved in the process, wants to have a say in what's going on. And so having a coach that can be amenable to that, a coach that understands that, but that can also manage those personalities and manage those feelings while they're moving all in concert toward a common goal, I think that's absolutely critical. And so it's a hard trait to find, but when you find it, you know it when you see it. It's John Harbaugh with the Baltimore Ravens. It's Mike Tomlin with the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's Sean McVay, as you mentioned, with the L.A. Rams. Like, you can know it. It's Andy Reid with the Kansas City Chiefs. You know it when you see it, and it comes with coaches that have areas of expertise on both sides of the ball. And then another thing, Mike, it's not like defensive coaches can't understand offensive football either. It's not like they don't have a high football acumen. When you look at Bill Belichick, when you look at Bill Parcells, Mike Tomlin is on the defensive side of the ball. He's developed quarterbacks. Like, there have been a lot of coaches throughout the National Football League that came up as defensive coordinators that developed young quarterbacks. Ben Roethlisberger was developed by Bill Cowher, who was a defensive coordinator and a linebacker in our league. Like, it's not like defensive-minded coaches can't develop young quarterbacks. We got to dispel that misnomer, because I think a lot of people are falling in love with what they've seen recently in the last 4 or 5 years and thinking all of a sudden defensive-minded coaches don't know how to handle young quarterbacks.
I mean, hell, what glow-up we talked about this year with Justin Herbert on the Chargers. I know it was inconsistent at times, but, I mean, over the course of the regular season, Justin Herbert put up better numbers than Josh Allen in a number of statistical categories, playing for Brandon Staley, the defensive-minded head coach, who, to your point, challenge Sean McVay every day in practice. There was a great article from Jordan Rodrigue, who covers the Rams for The Athletic, on how each of those guys took ideas from the other, helped the other formulate, knowing they had a competent mind across the field like that that they could battle with. We just had Teron Armstead, the tackle for the Saints, come on the show the other day and talk about how much guys in-house love Dennis Allen and the job that he had done there. So that ability to connect on full display with a number of recent candidates, it doesn't matter what side you come from. It matters the plan that you've got in place for those important commodities like your young quarterback once you get to that spot. That's what we got going on in the NFL. The hiring cycle, like we said, Matt Eberflus goes from the Colts defensive coordinator to the Chicago Bears head job. We saw Nathaniel Hackett get the head coaching job for the Denver Broncos, leaving the Green Bay Packers. Mike McCarthy apparently returning to the Dallas Cowboys, according to ESPN's Ed Werder. We'll keep you up to date on all those as the job openings and the coaching openings continue to close up. But coming up, Jack, next, LeBron James ruled out for tonight's game against the 76ers, which means all eyes are going to be squarely on Anthony Davis. What can we expect from the Lakers' other superstar going up against a guy who's in the MVP race right now? That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. The NBA is on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight as the Sixers host my Lakers. Presented by Indeed, coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN Radio stations. And Gojo, speaking of Sixers-Lakers, we got to drop the bomb on them. I'm a Lakers fan, so this hurts me to my heart, but LeBron James, the King, is going to be out of the lineup tonight. And Frank Vogel hasn't been known to be the best when it comes to juggling personnel with lineups and adjusting with different rotations. So I can't imagine that this is something that bodes well for them with AD being back just for his second game.
No. This is going to be all bad. Because, Chris, like I was going to ask going into tonight, had all things been equal, you know, Anthony Davis, knowing defense is probably going to be the focus while he gets his legs back under him, is there any chance he's able to hold Embiid to under 30? Joel Embiid scored 30 points at least in, I believe, 17 of his last 23 games, some of which have been 40 and 50-point monsters of it. But it's going to be so much in his hands at this point for a team that we know is disjointed every time LeBron's off the court. I got really no expectations for Anthony Davis now against Embiid here. He is going to have a little bit too much on his plate this night.
But why should you have expectations? I mean, think about it. This is Anthony Davis' second game back, and you're talking about a guy in Embiid who scored 170 points in his last 128 minutes and is coming off of a 42.6 rebound performance against the New Orleans Pelicans. This dude is absolutely dominant, man. There's a reason why the Sixers have won 12 of their last 16 games, and it's Joel Embiid. And so for Anthony Davis to completely just shut him down, I don't see that happening. It seems like the Sixers and Doc Rivers are more than comfortable funneling the offense through him. And then you got to give credit where credit is due. Tobias Harris has stepped up as that number two in Ben Simmons' absence and shouldered some of the load when it comes to scoring the basketball. So this Sixers team seems to have good chemistry, and we've heard Joel Embiid say as much. And I think they keep that momentum that they have right now rolling. And hopefully we'll start to talk about the narrative of Embiid being a front runner for the MVP award.
Yeah, I think you and I are both on board with that one, and hopefully that continues tonight. But, Chris, from the perspective of the Lakers and all this, too, so much of what we've talked about with Anthony Davis coming back, to me, was also very much connected to Russell Westbrook, because everyone we talked to, a lot of the NBA analysts, made it clear. Russell Westbrook was brought over here with the idea that he could work as a third alongside LeBron and Anthony Davis. The whole plan's always been for AD to take over and be the next guy. And so without that in place here, I am curious because we want Anthony Davis to take over the game tonight. That would be the ideal game script for the Los Angeles Lakers. The far more likely game script is that Russell Westbrook does a little bit too much pounding of the ball, does a little too much shooting from distance that is not his forte, and ends up taking this thing off the rails. And that's the unfortunate part.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, Anthony Davis is a guy that can shoot it pretty consistently from the outside. So maybe that creates some room for Russell Westbrook to be able to get into the paint and be able to get some easy buckets. We know that he struggled with this perimeter game this season. And in the last couple of years, you could probably say that as well. So I think with LeBron James being out tonight, Russ as the primary ball handler gives him an opportunity to get it going, to get some good feels around his game, and to create some goodwill with the coaching staff and the rest of the players on that team. Because right now, everybody's struggling in Lakers land to see the value add when it comes to Russell Westbrook. People are not calling them the big three anymore. They're saying it's LeBron James and Anthony Davis and then Russ as one of the other role players on that team. And that has not been a position that we've been accustomed to seeing Russell Westbrook in. Now, I know there's some grumblings about what the Lakers could potentially do with Russ at the trade deadline, but there are also people within the organization that don't want to admit that this was a failed move this offseason and that he doesn't fit with the pieces that they have on hand. So this is going to be tough, man, but I do think tonight with LeBron James being out does present an opportunity for Russ to get it going a little bit and to feel good about his game moving forward.
Kane and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. The NBA is on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight. The Sixers host the Lakers, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN radio stations. That is interesting what you mentioned about the front office in this, Chris, because what we did hear, remember when Russ was benched in the last 4 minutes of that fourth quarter against the Indiana Pacers, and we heard from Frank Vogel that he has been given the support from this organization to judge Russell Westbrook's minutes as he sees fit down the stretch. That was more of an admission publicly than I expected, that they were looking at this and understanding this had not gone even close to the way that they expected.
No, it hasn't gone close to what they've expected, and the Lakers have essentially exhausted all of their resources. I mean, you saw what they did. They shipped KCP and Kyle Kuzma out, and you see what Kuzma is doing. He's averaging 15.5 points a game, so he's balling for the Wizards. And you look at the Lakers roster, and you could probably use a little more of what Kuzma would be bringing to the table right about now, especially over the contribution that you've gotten from Russell Westbrook, because although the numbers might look a certain way, we know in terms of quantifying the impact on winning, it doesn't necessarily correlate to where the Lakers are at. So it's one of those pieces that doesn't fit. I understand the logic and why they went after Westbrook, because you needed somebody that could create offense for themselves and for others with LeBron off the court. But Russ has struggled to find his way being an off-the-ball player with LeBron being the primary ball handler, especially in the half court. And it's not showing any signs of getting better. And when you're talking about this being 48 games in now.
Yeah, and that's something that's been traditionally difficult for a lot of other stars who have come alongside to play with LeBron James. But to your point, the overlap of skill and ability in the areas these guys have success, AD, LeBron, and Russ, all generally doing a ton of damage in the paint, makes for a tough time in a crowded field on that Los Angeles side of things. Now, Chris, on the other side of this, we talk so much about the Sixers and Joel Embiid. The conversation's extended out now. We have the Brooklyn Nets, basically through Adrian Wojnarowski, reports that the Brooklyn Nets are not fielding offers for James Harden, trade offers. We know the 76ers are one of those teams linked to. Who's making the bigger mistake in the way they've handled this, Chris? Is it the 76ers? Is it their GM and what they've been doing there? Or is it the Brooklyn Nets now who are apparently going to close the door on trying to deal a guy that could walk after the season?
I think it's the Brooklyn Nets by far. And I get it. They're a team that's the favorite to win the NBA title this year, but I don't think they will go, Joe. It's certainly not going to happen if you don't have all three of the big three healthy. But I look at this situation, and I recognize the frustration that James Harden expressed after their loss to the Lakers the other night, and it's one of those things that's hard to overlook, or I think it'll be hard for Sean Marks and Josiah to smooth over because you're already talking about somebody that was on the fence with committing to the organization long-term. They've had a contract extension on the table since the start of training camp, and James Harden hasn't signed it. And there are reports out there that he intends to test free agency. And so with the Kyrie Irving saga going on and his undependability, I don't know that James Harden wants to sign up for something like this long term, knowing that Kyrie is going to be one of the focal points of what the Brooklyn Nets try to build around. Because James Harden and Kevin Durant have both shown that there are no-nonsense guys when it comes to basketball. Like, it's all about basketball. It's not about anything else. And there's a big piece of this team that doesn't necessarily seem to be focused or have the commitment that those two guys have. So I don't know that James Harden is going to be here. And if he's not going to be here, if you're Brooklyn, then you got to try to get something for him.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting part to keep in mind too, as you mentioned, the frustration. We've seen James Harden, whether he's called anyone out by name or not yet, or whether you believe the reports, just by his own admission, the guy's been frustrated with the situation in Brooklyn. We've heard him speak on that in a way that we have not yet heard Joel Embiid speak on any frustration with him right now, maybe not getting the help that we all think he deserves with that Philadelphia 76ers roster. It'll be interesting as we get closer to the trade deadline if any part of that tune changes, especially if Joel Embiid keeps up the tear that he is on right now as a scorer. That's what we've got to look forward to tonight. Again, you're going to be able to catch that game on ESPN. The 76ers and the Los Angeles Lakers, with LeBron James inactive tonight, going to be out in this big-time matchup. Coming up next, though, we'll look. It is almost time here. It is the day before, the day before, the day before, heading into the NFL's Conference Championship weekend. We'll look at the best of what's left on the gridiron next on ESPN Radio.
Sports Radio.
Hello, everybody. I'm Chris Berman, and welcome aboard to the ESPN Radio Network.
30 years and counting. This is ESPN Radio. This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. And Gojo, with today, we had the hires of Nathaniel Hackett for the Denver Broncos, their next head coach. We saw what happened with the Chicago Bears hiring Matt Eberflus. We just got the news that Mike McCarthy down in Dallas is going to be safe. He'll be the Cowboys coach on the sidelines in 2022. Speculation about Byron Leftwich with the Jacksonville Jaguars. But Gojo, I feel like we got to give the coaches that are actually going to be on the sidelines this coming weekend during the conference championship round some credit. I mean, we got four really, really good coaches in their own right. Of course, Big Red, Andy Reid, coaching not one, but two teams to four consecutive conference championship appearances, and the Chiefs becoming the first team to host the conference championships four consecutive years. We got Zach Taylor, who in a lot of people's minds should be a candidate for NFL Coach of the Year. On the other side of the bracket, we know about Sean McVay, the boy wonder, the boy genius, who is, younger than a lot of his players. And then you have also Kyle Shanahan, who's done it a little bit of a different way in San Francisco. But that begs the question, with all of these different coaches being looked at as some of the top coaches, the brightest minds the NFL has to offer, who would you say is the best coach on conference championship weekend?
Yeah, Chris, this is going to be interesting because there are some great articles that have come out recently. Ben Solak over at The Ringer did a great one about Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan and how their fates have kind of been intertwined. And really, the story and construction for the teams has been super similar. But I think Andy Reid, for me, and I know part of this is an easy cop-out because he's the Super Bowl champion of the group. But, Chris, you also look, we talked about this the other day. Taking two separate franchises to four straight conference championship appearances, first with the Eagles and then now with the Kansas City Chiefs, that's hard to ignore what he's been able to do with multiple coordinators under his helm there. We talked about all the leadership traits you need as a coach, and he's got him in spades.
No doubt about it. Plus, Andy Reid is, I think, the only coach in the NFL's history to have 100 wins with two separate franchises. So shout out to Andy Reid for being able to accomplish that. But I think you're right. I think Andy Reid is the clear-cut number one out of this group. And the question is, who's the second-best coach out of the lot? And for my money, I would go with Kyle Shanahan. I mean, he's got the pedigree. He's grown up around the NFL. His dad, Mike Shanahan, and what he's done with the Washington football team and the Denver Broncos. And so I think this is one of those situations where you look at it, Kyle insisted on having final say over the overall roster. He went out and hired John Lynch to be a lieutenant for him in the front office in the general manager's role. And he's been able to have high-level success in this league without having conviction or confidence in the guy that he has under center and quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo. So I think you got to give Kyle a lot of credit to have this team back in the conference championship and one game away from their second Super Bowl appearance in 3 years. I mean, credit where credit is due. Kyle Shanahan has done a hell of a job with this team.
It's so hard for me to try and parse these two out because, Chris, in general, I agree with you, but I think it's because it's kind of like what flavor ice cream do you like type thing. Because when you look at both of these teams and the way they're constructed, teams that want to run that outside zone as the foundation of what they do on offense, build in the play-action shots behind that. Their defense survives on dominant four-man pass rushes with some of the best rushes in the league with guys like Nick Bosa, Aaron Donald and company. Their defensive coordinators have become commodities. We saw that with Brandon Staley last year leaving Los Angeles. DeMeco Ryans is getting a ton of praise for what he's done on the 49ers side of it. Chris, I think it just comes down to, for me, like nitty-gritty football and all this. We've seen Sean McVay and his style run into some issues because you're asking guys to do some pretty different things. We've seen that big slot receiver become an integral part of what some teams are doing in the NFL. And when you run as much 11 personnel, one tight end, one back stuff as Sean McVay wants to do in that offense, you got to have a Robert Woods who's willing to get down there and get dirty. You've got to have receivers that can go a bit outside their skill set at the foundation of all that. And then you look at what Kyle's got over there. He's got Juszczyk, he's got Kittle. It's a lot of two backs, one tight end, two tight end stuff there. That to me in the NFL, we've seen going back to his time with the Atlanta Falcons, when you can win with great tight ends, big skill, that group in the middle, I just think the chess match becomes that much more daunting for you. And now you plug in a guy like Deebo Samuel in that offense, and the way that he's been able to constantly adjust to all that, I think for me just puts him a little bit ahead of Sean McVay and what he's done.
Yeah, the other element, well, I would probably also side with Kyle Shanahan, is his ability to draft and develop players. Like, we've seen the L.A. Rams take some big swings. They look at first-round draft picks as fun coupons. They swipe that credit card, seems like, every single offseason, trading future first-round draft picks in order to bring over singular talents. You saw what they did with Matt Stafford. You saw what they did with Jalen Ramsey. That's something that they're committed to doing. That's their philosophical approach. Whereas Kyle is much more prudent when it comes to draft capital, and you don't necessarily have to have a first round grade or be a first round pick in order to have the ability to impact this team and become a critical piece in what they're trying to do in order for them to win. Seeing what he's done with Deebo Samuel, seeing how he's developed George Kittle, those to me are really, really, really impressive. Like, the fact that you're able to do that, the fact that you're able to develop a guy like Fred Warner to become one of the very best inside linebackers in all of football. Those things matter to we as well, Gojo, like having the ability to develop those guys. Elijah Mitchell, their running back in the backfield, not a heralded guy, not a high pick, but a highly productive player. I think Kyle Shanahan being able to identify certain skill sets from guys, talents from guys, foster their development and turn them into impact pieces, I think I'd have to give the edge to him over Sean McVay in that regard.
It is interesting because that is probably the one other area where we talk about the styles make fights. And again, two guys that are super similar, like even the offense you mentioned, Deebo Samuel, Cooper Kupp, both incredibly versatile pieces, talented wide receivers at the foundation of what they do. You're right. All the best parts of the Rams that we're looking at right now, quarterback, Odell Beckham Jr., wide receiver, Von Miller, who turned the clock back to 2016, they went out and grabbed all of them versus the 49ers doing it their way, what him and John Lynch have been able to do, acquiring talent over there. It's been fun to watch. It's as close to a Spider-Man pointing meme as possible with NFL head coaches, but I'm with you. I think I side with Kyle Shanahan. Zach Taylor's got potential. They've turned that around quickly, and he deserves a ton of credit for that, but this is a big fight with a lot of big names at the top of it, and it's going to make this weekend a ton of fun to go ahead and watch. But coming up next, if you are getting ready to watch this weekend and getting ready to watch the Super Bowl coming up, we now have the number one party destination circled and outlined for you heading into Super Bowl Sunday. We will tell you where that is next. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we are presented by Progressive Insurance. You could save big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat insurance. Visit Progressive.com. And Gojo, we were just talking about a point of difference between Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, and the fact that Dre Greenlaw, outside linebacker for the San Francisco 49ers, was a fifth-round pick in the 2019 draft, and he's doing what he's doing now. I mean, wow, dude. That is special what Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have been able to do in terms of identifying mid-round picks and then turning them into contributors in short order.
It's been insane. You pointed that out because we were trying to find the difference between those two coaches and that area right there, what Kyle and that group have been able to do, finding and growing talent in that spot. It has been truly remarkable. Man, that's the goal. If you want to find value every year and get yourself back to moments like this, when the 49ers stay healthy, good things tend to happen for Kyle Shanahan and that bunch.
So shout out to Kyle Shanahan, and we also got to give a shout out to the guests that joined us on Canty and Golic Jr. today. My former teammate and Super Bowl champion Lawrence Guy, defensive tackle with the New England Patriots. Aaron Dolan, ESPN sports betting analyst. If you hadn't caught her on our show the last couple of weeks, you're late. You need to get him on board because she's going to get your money right when it comes to betting conference championship weekend. And then, of course, comedian, actor, and Houdet, Cincinnati Bengals fan Gary Owens coming on the show. If you missed any of it, go to the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast, download, rate, subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. But Gojo, we have now reached the portion of our show where it's time for us to go three and out.
Sometimes it's the worst. Sometimes it's the best. Either way, we'll get you straight with everything you need to know. This is Three and Out.
All right, three and out here on Canty and Golic Jr. Starts off with party time here. And if you're going to party, Rob Gronkowski's probably the guy to do it with. Chris, he's teamed up with Groupon for Super Bowl Sunday to give one lucky fan and 15 of their closest friends the chance to travel to Gronk's home in Foxborough, Massachusetts, and party in his basement on Super Bowl Sunday. The party is expected to have mini golf, a bounce house, adult beverages, and the best part, Chris, he said, everything in my house has been broken before. My brothers have been there before. They brought their friends over. My house has been destroyed. We're not trying to store it, but there's no doubt about that. There will be a whole security team here ready to make it happen. So you have got him and his two brothers party time for Super Bowl weekend. Seems like that's a guaranteed winner.
No doubt about it. I don't know Rob Gronkowski personally. I never kicked it with him, but I got to imagine if we were hanging out, that's that rock star lifestyle might not make it. Like, that's going in that direction. And I got to imagine there's got to be some swag surfing in there too. Like, those guys look like they know how to have a good time, and I'm pretty sure that nobody's going to leave that party sober. So for whoever wins that fan, good luck, because that's going to be a really good time that you're probably not going to remember.
Exactly, and I can't imagine cameras are going to be allowed in there. So, again, just make
check
the memories.
Check the cell phone at the door. Check the cell phones at the door.
you don't want any of those problems. What happens in Gronk's house probably needs to stay there forever. Canty and Golic Jr., looking towards something else we love on this show. Good bit of shade. The Lakewood Police Department in Colorado, home of the Denver Broncos in the same division as the Kansas City Chiefs, probably weren't thrilled that Kansas City got through to another AFC championship game and decided to take out their frustrations on the Buffalo Bills that let it happen. The Lakewood Police Department tweeted out, quote, "There will be 2 to 5 inches of snow tomorrow during the AM rush hour. So you have to know the routine. Make sure your tires have good tread, drive slowly, and give the same amount of room to nearby cars that the Bills gave to Travis Kelce with 7 seconds left to get to field goal range. Hashtag Bills versus Chiefs." They're not mad. They're not mad at all. Why would anyone say that they're mad, Chris?
Yeah, that shade is coming from a place of hurt. And if you're a Bills fan, I can absolutely understand what you're going through, because that franchise has had some heartbreaking losses. And what happened on Sunday in the divisional round, like, that was a heartbreaker, man. No team in that game deserved to lose that game. It just so happens that there had to be one loser, and it ended up being the Buffalo Bills. And that's an all-too-familiar spot for Bills Mafia. So I can understand why they're going to get their issue and they're going to express that. They're probably not excited about the snowstorm about to hit them, yeah. And they're not excited about what's happening with their Buffalo Bills being on the outside looking into the playoffs, because with 14 seconds left, they should have won that damn game. And the fact that they lost it, they still feel some type of way about it. This is not going to be a loss that leaves this fan base anytime soon. This ain't going away. This is going to be something that stays with them. I'm sure that we're going to have to come up with a name for it, because most of the heartbreaking losses have a name to them. This is going to get one. Like, they've got wide right already. They're going to come up with a name for this one throughout the course of the offseason, and this is going to live in infamy in the history of the Buffalo Bills franchise.
At some point, Christine Lisi, our beloved Christine Lisi, is going to get to be on the right side of history in one of these damn name games. I hope that for our friend, and I know everyone here does too. Chris, he's back. As we have seen around the world of football, some of the USFL teams getting ready to start things back up, announcing their head coaching hires. The head coach of the Michigan Panthers, none other than Jeff Fisher. And Chris, I don't know a lot about life. Jeff Fisher seems like an awesome dude, but he is a consistent force of his nature in football. Congratulations to the USFL Panthers on going 500 in however many games their league allots.
Wow, there you go, continuing the shade. It wasn't enough from the police department on social
media. I like
media Jeff
shading
Fisher.
The Bills. I want to
go
fishing
with the guy. Now you're shading
Jeff
Fisher. Stop it.
We know what it is.
Stop yourself. You know what I also know about Jeff Fisher? Two things I could say about his teams. They're going to have a really good defense, They're going to have a really good running back. I don't know about the other parts of it, but I know those two about the Michigan Panthers in the USFL. They will have those two things, if nothing else, going for them when Jeff Fisher is your head coach.
They're going to be able to tote the damn rock.
No
that
question.
Is for sure.
No question.
But Chris, much like going to the grocery store hungry, most people say don't come to Canty and Golic Jr. hungry because bad things are going to happen.
Probably.
And that's what happened to me today. McDonald's tweeted this out. They are coming out with 4 new menu hacks as a part of their lineup here. You've got the Surf and Turf, which combines the filet of fish and, I believe, a quarter pounder. The Hash Brown McMuffin, which is exactly what it sounds like. The Crunchy Double, which appears to be a hash brown inside of a McDouble. And last but not least, Chris, the Land, Air, and Sea, which combines a chicken sandwich, a Big Mac, and a filet of fish, all housed under one Big Mac-like bun. I'm
ding,
not gonna
ding,
lie.
Ding.
I'm all in on the Land, Air, and Sea. I'm going to have to try it for science.
That sounds like that's going to give your stomach all kinds of problems, bro. Like, the Crunchy Double seems like something I can get on board with, a hash brown inside a double quarter pounder. Who couldn't win with something like that? Like, that's a win. I can do that, because you're talking about the fries that you would normally get with the value meal now being a part of the burger. It's all going in the same place anyway. But putting the burger, the chicken sandwich, and the fish filet on the same sandwich?
Extra tartar sauce, Mike?
I can't.
Oh, man.
I don't understand.
Listen.
Devin, I don't understand you two guys, man. You can't both sides this thing. This is disgusting. There's no other way to look at it. Why would you want to do that to your body?
Listen, as someone who has already taken down the Meat Mountain and the Arby's menu, which is probably an off-menu item there, let me put you all on game here. As someone who did our lunch
I've never
Arby's.
Heard of that. I've never heard of that.
And I promise you, it is a challenge worth your time, as is the Land, Air, and Sea. It's coming out January 31st, and for science, for this show, I promise I'm going to give you guys that. Up next on ESPN Radio, they're going to give you Lakers and Sixers.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+. Plus.